The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
It's all about Cara Finn, Conan. It's all about Cara Finn. The greatest ever club team. Are we going to go down that road? That's open to opinion. I don't think I'm going to go down that road. But it's absolutely an incredible, incredible performance against Croke's team, who were All-Ireland Champions 2017. Now, they didn't show up in the day, but could they show up against an awesome team? Could Nemo show up against an awesome team? Could Slocknail, who we know are a bloody battle-hardened good team, yeah, could they show up? They won their last three All-Irelands by a cumulative total of 37 points. So, like, I mean, it's beyond belief. They won by 10 against Slocknail, they won by 15 last year, and they won by 12 against Croke. So, like, three solid, bloody good club teams. Croke Park suits them. They love it. They're a brilliant, brilliant team. It's just there's not much more you can say about Cara Finn. They play football that's breathtaking. The angles of the runs, the style of play. They can mix a running hand passing game up with a kick passing game, diagonal balls. They have it every way. They can hurt you so many different ways. They have a dominating, marauding midfield that you're not going to get anything off. Like, yeah, they're going to beat you probably in the air if you go long to midfield. They have forwards that can win any game that are practically six, arguably inter-county Division 3 minimum, yeah, level forwards. And then their defence, their attacking wing backs and Tigers full back line. Like, I mean, there's no weaknesses. They look like a county team. That's the best compliment. They don't look like a club team. They look like a county team.
Like a very good county team. I mean, when you think you've scored a goal against them, Kieran Fitzgerald's there blocking on the line then as well, just throwing his body in the way. Yeah. It's just so, like, stingy with the opposition. Like, yeah, every single thing you could want in a team, they haven't. I have no idea how you would even begin preparing for them. Like, I was watching, I was sitting in front of Pat O'Shea, you know, for the whole game and watching him, and it just looked awful for him. Like, you know, he's losing his rag, rightly so, but the only way you can prepare for them is to go back to under 8s and get a team ready in 20 years' time to play them. Like, you know, there's no way.
Croke froze. Now, Croke's did freeze on the day. There was a combination now, but, like, I mean, like I said, did Slocknail freeze and did Nemo freeze? It's obviously the credit goes to Cara Finn.
Yeah.
But Jesus, it looked like men against boys, didn't it? Like, I mean, it men against boys. It looked like an under 21 team versus a seasoned, yeah, senior team.
It did. Like, there was a Dublin lad in the crowd shouting out, "Doctor Chokes! Doctors!" And I was like, ah, here, they're just being, like, having the floor wiped with them. Like, they're just, they had them every way, as you said. And, yeah, I don't know, like, what, like, did Crokes choke, or was it just Cara Finn were so good? Like, were they even better than we gave them credit for?
Yeah.
I know we backed them on Thursday, but were they just
miles ahead? Thank God we backed them. And how did the bookies have it, really, even money? But I suppose this is all hindsight stuff. But the Gary Sice goal, Sice was brilliant again. He's a real smart, intelligent player. And for a fella who played a lot of wing back at intercounty level, he's just a brilliant, brilliant playmaking forward. Great passer of the ball. But, like, I mean, this just sums them up. And we know about the hand passing goal they scored against Nemo, and it was used as the reason not to limit the hand pass. But this wasn't as good as that, but it was on a similar level. So I think it was Farragher running through. And it was the run by Dahi Burke, right? So Dahi Burke didn't just run a support line beside him. Dahi Burke cuts, yeah, across him. And I was tagged in a tweet over the weekend by Aidan O'Mahony, and it was a bit of fun, really. They were talking about the three-man weave and what a waste of a drill
yeah,
that every team in the country does and they've done all their lives. And I was thinking to myself, that's funny and I get what you're saying, but I was always thinking the three-man weave is completely misunderstood. The three-man weave has always been, let's just do this to warm up. There's never been... I've done that three-man weave so many times and no management team has ever explain why you're doing that.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I would think the three-man weave would be a great drill to drill into your full back line, working the ball out the field. So when your full back has it, that he's not just going on his own, that there's lads cutting off him at angles and giving him a support run. But this is what it's all about, a support run and angles. The angles are killing you. So it was Dahi Burke cutting behind him.
Mm.
And Farragher almost with a sixth sense giving it off to him. He's dragging players that way. And does the ball end up the side Dahi Burke runs? Of course not.
Yeah.
It's going to be shipped back to Sice, who is pleading with Farragher in the first place. But he knew right well, maybe if I give it across to Sice, he's going to get closed down. Let's use this runner, Doughty Burke, to drag lads out of there. And it ended across with Sice, who just pounds it into net. It's just beautiful stuff. But it's like that three man weave, angles of running. Everybody always says it. Like, give the man on the ball loads and loads of options.
Yeah.
That's what you want. You always want options, especially up front.
Yeah. Give and go as well. So once you give it, you're not done. Like, you're giving it and you're going around the back on another angle of a run. And I think the better coaches, what they would do is introduce a defender in their three-man weave, so it's 3-on-1 then, and then you're getting a pass to defender, and then it's not the same sort of robotic thing that you're doing. Like, the best teams in the country, like Vincent's and like Corfin, they sniff out when they've got an extra man, and that's when the three-man weave comes into it then, because two or three of you are targeting that extra man or the extra two men, whatever amount you have over, and then you go at that space, like, and that's like what Corfin did, and he just passed it the whole way into the net. It was unreal. Like, and everybody's active in the forward line, every single one of them, always moving, always coming into space, and
yeah,
just are always there, like, and they're actually genuinely showing for it. They're not just moving for the sake of it.
Yeah, it was absolutely unbelievable. There was only 17,819 people in Croke Park. It usually averages around 30,000. That was really disappointing. Now, they both have to travel a fair distance. I don't think either Corrifin or Crokes are very well supported. Thomas is only a tiny little village. Ballyhale's only a little village. So it's probably the four teams that were well in. Although, like, I mean, what club team is supported? Two villages, we're saying, aren't well supported. And then Crokes, which is a town team, they're not well supported. Corrifin is a kind of an area team. So I don't know. I think it's about time that we talked about this enough times that match is moved out of Paddy's Day. It's hard to get in around Dublin on that day. You know what I mean? With all the parades and stuff like that. Do you really want to drive in? You might not know Dublin that well. You're from, different parts of the country. It's off-putting. It's on the telly.
Yeah.
I think it's only die-hard club fans are going to these matches now.
Yeah. And like, there any neutrals that might have gone? Like, Dublin were playing the night before and they all freeze their bollocks off in Croke Park on Saturday night watching Tyrone beat them. So, you know, you sort of, like, the inter-county scene swallowed it up a little bit as well, where it's always St. Patrick's Day, but it's usually during the week on St. Patrick's Day, so it's out on its own. Yeah, like,
yeah,
like,
that's it. The weekend didn't help, yeah.
Yeah, like, we talked about having December, like, and I could genuinely see 40, 50,000 people coming in December as the last game of the year, and, like, you know, it's been building up to this. We're all in club mode. There's no other big game on. There's so many big games at the weekend there. If you put it in December to end the year, I think it would be a real feast.
Yeah, where it's not diluted. So, like, I mean, the Croke sending off their captain, John Payne. It was on Leonard, was it? Was it the kick out was on Leonard, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
But I think Leonard made the most of that. I don't think he made contact with his mouth. It was actually a weird one. He did kick up. I wouldn't have sent him off for that. I think that's more out of frustration. But he was bleeding from the mouth. But Lundy came in and pushed Kieran O'Leary down on top of him, which hurt him way more than what Payne did. And I think that was it. It's difficult enough. They were going to get hammered regardless of whether he got sent off or not. He was marking Ian Burke, and then Fionn Fitzgerald had to go over. They were being hammered anyways against the wind. So it had no bearing on the game. From the replay I saw, he didn't make contact with his face. It was kind of in the chest. Maybe if you kick up like that, you're giving yourself the red card. I don't know.
Studs as well.
The studs, yeah. Maybe it was dangerous. Because even if it didn't catch him in the face, which I don't think it did, it's still dangerous to do that anyways.
Yeah, no, I definitely would have sent him off. That was stupid as well. He got it free. Like, do you know what I know?
Yeah, for the captain. He was captain. Yeah. Like, he
and Mark and Ian Burke, such an important job. Yeah. Like, you know, I don't know, it was unnecessary, and it was just very dangerous. When I see studs going up towards somebody like that, I think you just sort of get what you deserve.
Yeah, maybe you're right. Lundy gave the match officials 3 cheers. Did you hear that in his speech? Like, I mean, I've never heard match officials to get such a... 3 cheers is reserved for the losers, and everybody hates that 3 cheers anyways. Like, it means nothing. You're down, I've lost finals, and you're given a 3 cheers, and it's just like, oh, this is... I prefer not to have any attention be drawn to us. We're just going to show respect, stay out in the field.
Yeah.
Just don't mention us.
Yeah, because everyone looks at you and you're all standing.
And the TV cameras all pan down as you're like just looking at the ground.
Yeah.
And you're getting a token 3 cheers from the captain, who might be even smiling when he's doing it. And I hate that tradition. I really do. But Lundy gave it to the match officials. So, like, I mean, I think Lundy might have given it to the match officials because he gave Gucci a right punch into the face. Now, he'll say he was tackling the ball, but he's still bursting. Lundy was aggressive. And he was out around midfield, and that's a new role from him. When the destroyed slot nail, he was full forward. He was the linchpin of the forward line. And they've evolved now. Martin Farragher is the new man in there with Ian Burke. And Lundy's given a real working role, and he's aggressive, and he was really in. And It was Leonard, Mark, Gavin, White. We were wondering about our matchups last week, but Lundy was definitely all over the field. And you were saying in the second half, I didn't notice this on television, that when they had the spare man, Lundy ended up, they wriggled around for Lundy to be the spare man. So it wasn't, you know, the old tradition in GAA is if you have an extra man, the man sent off, he immediately goes in as the sweeper.
Yeah, and the cornerback just pick, even though he's not a good player, he just becomes a spare man.
I hate that. It always amazed me.
Yeah. The boy who doesn't want the ball is a spare man.
Yeah. Like, use the spare man to go into an attacking position that the opposition, not only do have a man sent off, they're now going to have to take off a forward to bring on.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, so you're doubly screwing them by actually leaving the spare man up front.
No, it was really well done. And because Crooks were going for it as well, Crooks couldn't really sort of adjust to try and watch Lundy because they wanted to keep men forward. And
right.
Yeah, like, he did it really well. He had the legs on him. He was getting back when they needed an extra man back. But then he was a free man then going forward. And it meant for the kickouts, for Crooks' kickouts, they had an extra man pushed up. So they were really squeezing them in.
Right.
Bit of a wind coming in off the hill. So that's why it was so just like a foregone conclusion for Crooks in the second half. Couldn't get out. And it was just all Cora Finn.
Like, yeah, outstanding stuff from Cora Finn. You'd be brave enough to back against them doing three in a row, although it's going to be a difficult one for them to do. Like, you just imagine, they probably got their hardest games this year in Galway in the county final. They needed a replay. Now, very defensive display that day. But at the same time, Galway club football must be in pretty good health, because the county team are doing pretty well. They've had a great league. They're after beating Roscommon at the weekend. It was interesting to read Kevin Walsh a comment after beating Roscommon. So Galway are getting a bit of bad press, and like, we're probably agreeing that when you see what Tyrone could do to Dublin, and then you see the forwards that Galway have, and you'd be like pulling your hair out saying, Jesus lads, you've got the tools to really hurt these teams. I'm not sure if they're using it. Now, in their defence, they haven't had their full complement, and they've been really, really experimental in this league. So for them to be on 8 points with the amount of players they've been down, no Cora Finn lads, it shouldn't be taken away from Galway how they're performing to that level and beating the teams that they're doing. But it was interesting, Kevin Walsh was responding to the criticism that they're receiving at intercounty level, and he says, to be honest, I don't really overly care about what's being said. Our lads are very happy in what we're doing and we're working very hard. At the end of the day, people want results, and we're going to try and give them as many results as we can to Galway. So I think that was a really interesting one after the Cora Finn one. Cora Finn fans want results, and they get results as well.
Yeah.
It seems to be that the perception, defensive managers seem to put this perception out there, and it's the same with Fermanagh and Carlo. Any of these ones that are the more extreme ones, this is the only way we can get results. Where's the evidence that you've tried something else? You know what I mean? Where's the evidence that this management team, and like, I don't want to get bogged down in that conversation. I just thought it was interesting. Coming the day before Cora Finn got an All-Ireland result playing scintillating football, Kevin Walsh is talking about having to do that to get results himself. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I thought that was an interesting one. But anyways, we won't get too bogged down in that, because Dublin are out of the league final. That's probably the big headline coming from the intercounty season, and we're going to talk about Tyrone a little bit in part two. But I'm not sure whether this should be reading too much into being out of the league. Now, it is interesting that it's the only time under Jim Gavin they haven't made the league. They're going for five in a row. So the perception out there is that Dublin don't care about this league and they're really only focused on a championship. I think that's bullshit.
Yeah.
Jim Gavin, like, it was like he was after sucking on a lemon in his interview afterwards. He was livid.
Like that,
he was livid. And he was like, this isn't good enough. It's very out of character performance from
to
Dublin.
Play for Dublin.
We are not used to that. We are not used to that. And I don't know, like, could it be that the pressure of this year, could it be that while Jim Gavin is telling them we want to win every game, players themselves are more focused on the championship, and they're maybe in their own head say, Jesus, well, one thing I don't want to do is I don't want to be injured for this five in a row, or I don't want to, you know, that.
Yeah.
There's no way Jim Gavin is saying to them, lads, this is our own focus, because what's worked for them every other year has been to win the league and then win the championship, because we know that realistically, Leinster is a joke for Dublin, so they're not getting the quality games against the top teams until All-Ireland quarterfinal Super 8. So they need that league final. You know, they just want it. And especially in the early rounds of the league, you don't know who's trying what. So the league final is one huge championship level game that Dublin really need based on the fact that they won't have another one until August.
Yeah, like that idea that they're focusing on the championship.
It's nonsense.
They were focusing on the championship the last 4 years, and they got to the league final. Like, you know, it wasn't like they weren't prioritising the championship. They were still going for the All Ireland, and this is what happened. And Jim Gavin's never lost three games in a year. You know, again, like, they're not doing something differently and saying, let's focus. They keep winning the championship. Yeah. Like, you know, so why would they change that? So this is, like, you know, like, they're still favourites to win the championship, obviously, but, like, you know, this is a wobble. Like, this is worst form than they've ever had under Jim Gavin. Like, they are in their worst period of form. They've lost three out of six.
Yeah.
They're losing every other game. Like, that's against Division 1 opposition who are good, great, but Dublin usually just swat these boys aside.
They have been. They've been winning at the reasons. They've been winning even when they haven't been playing well. That well. And the most striking thing was when Sludden got sent off, which was a joke of a black card, by the way. Like, I mean, at what point was it O'Connor, Keane O'Connor maybe, who he was wrestling with, and the two of them were at it, and then he just falls down and Sludden. That's not a black card. That's not what the black card is in for. Like, I mean, it's a slight foul, or even if it was a foul, but it's nonsense. But there was no comeback. There was no backs to the wall by Tyrone. It was bizarre. Like, Tyrone were at their ease with 14 men in Croke Park against Dublin. That's worrying for Dublin. Like, what is going on mentally with them is what I would be wondering.
Because we were raving about them against Kerry, because, you know, they came back and you were saying about what great champions they are. And
yeah.
They're never beaten. But they did seem beaten in this game. Like, it was the first time that you seem to have them with 10 minutes to go, even with 14 men. Dublin always, even when they're going down, they swing out at you and they use the score from it. But, like, they had one shot from about 18 yards out and it was blocked, and that was it, really. Like, Tyrone were 2 points. There were 2 points in it when they went to man down.
Yeah.
20 minutes ago.
They went out to
24.
Four,
went out to four.
Yeah. So Kieran Shannon tweeted, might prove not to be significant, the Dubs not making the league final, but the last drive for five bid we've seen in senior GAA, Kilkenny 2010, Kilkenny failed to make the playoff stages for the league for the first time that spring. So in 08, they topped the league in, or they were table toppers and semi-finalists versus Tip. They were league finalists then in 06, 07 and 09. So, like, I mean, they got caught, obviously, by Tipperary. Now, the difference between the Kilkenny drive for five and the Dublin drive for five is that Tipperary almost beat Kilkenny for the four. So Kilkenny were going for five in a row knowing that this Tipperary was a really coming team under Liam Sheedy. And that, you know what I mean? That while they were favourites to beat them in the final, I don't see a team having done that last year to Dublin. You know what I mean? A team needs to come out of nowhere, really, to be, other than Mayo. But, you know, like, I mean,
yeah,
I'm not sure Mayo can beat Dublin in All-Ireland final, if I'm being honest.
There's still a bigger gap from Dublin to everybody else than there was from Kilkenny.
That's what I mean. Yeah. Now, Kerry, maybe the 82 Kerry one was a better one, like, because they were unbeatable that year and they couldn't do it. So I've said this before. We speculated here. What, like, remember it was Sheedy, who said that it's just his nerves. He missed a penalty.
Oh, yeah.
Mikey Sheedy missed a penalty in the final and just went, he felt weighed down.
Yeah,
and
felt like he had concrete in his boots or something. Is that what,
like,
it was?
Yeah,
that he said?
We were joking about all this. Like, I mean, imagine the pressure they're under. But, like, I mean, this is serious pressure. This is a five in a row, unprecedented, never happened before. This is Dublin, the big glamour team. All the pressure that Dublin are under anyway to perform because they're the highest profile team. And this is just adding to it. Like I said, we won't know until the year is out.
Yeah,
definitely.
The only thing is, like, they've only won three games, but they still have the best score difference in the league. So when they turn up, they're still by far the best team in the country. Like, there was just
they beat Galway well in Croke Park, which Galway didn't really show up. The only other thing, because we said we'll mention this game in part two, is the Niall Morgan hit on Paddy Andrews. It was a little bit sickening to watch. Now, my analysis of this is, if you get an opportunity to take Paddy Andrews out on the blind side like that, 95% of players would take it. Like, the whole risk of going for a ball that you can't quite know where your bearings are is the chance that you could be taken out, and brave players always go for that. Now, there's taking him out legally and there's taking him out illegally. Now, we're not going to speculate on whether Niall Morgan tried to knock him out, basically. But you are fully entitled, and you'd be a bit of an idiot, really, if you have a chance to blindside, hit a lad, rattle him with a shoulder, let him rattle him so hard with a shoulder that he has to leave the pitch. Better still, I'd do it myself, no problem. The point of the matter is that Niall Morgan mistimed his tackle and caught him straight into the face. Intentional or not, I don't care. That's what he did, you know? So it's a sending off. It's an absolute blatant red card. He came across recklessly. His intentions was to completely take Paddy Andrews out. Whether illegally, or legally, we'll say whether what he wanted to do, we don't know. But he took him out illegally because he didn't time the challenge right. So it's a clear red card as far as I'm concerned. Mm.
Yeah, like I think it was a red card. I actually would have a bit of sympathy for him, like obviously for Andrews as well, but for Morgan and that, I don't think he was going, like that happens in every single game.
See,
like
I don't care if he wanted to do him or not.
Yeah, no.
Like, I mean, every player will try to rattle the shit out of him in that situation.
Yeah, exactly.
You're going to try and take him out legally. But the fact of the matter is, he didn't time it, and he took him out illegally.
Yeah.
So it's a clear, red.
And I agree. But I just like there's a like people calling like Joe Brawley was saying Morgan's a pup. He's been at this stuff before. But in that situation, that's a cultural thing. Like the ball's there, and it's like it's perfectly timed, and you can clatter into a player, and you just throw your body into him. Like, and that happens all over the country.
And
in
you,
every game.
If you were a manager and you said you had a chance to take him out and you didn't
exactly.
take him, you wouldn't be even happy.
Why are you pulling right of that?
Why would you not? Yeah. Jesus, hit him.
Yeah.
And lay down a marker and all these things. But again, so Niall Morgan did the right thing by trying to take him out. He did it legally instead of legally. Isn't that fair enough?
Yeah, I think so. And he's also a keeper, so he's so far away from his goals, he has to do something. He can't just stand them up now and start tackling them. He has to end that play with a free or whatever it is, like, you know.
Yeah, because you often say to goalkeepers as well, and you know a long ball's coming in and they get applauded for this, and a fella could be just going up to catch it or punch it, and the goalie comes out, takes man
just
and ball
on man,
and
yeah.
you're encouraged to do that. And if your goalkeeper's not able to do that, he's not a very good goalie. So that's applauded, you know what I mean? So I don't know, like, I mean, he should have got a red, and it was a bit sickening to see Paddy Andrews fall the way he did.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Awful,
he was clearly knocked out. So how a referee would see that and go, that wasn't a red, it was just a bizarre decision. So anyways, that was the game of the night, because I started watching Mayo Kerry thinking this was going to be a great game. And it was on Armagh Donegal levels of wind and rain. So it turned out that it was a shite game, really. And the players aren't at fault for this. It just ended up being a battle.
Yeah.
You could read feck all into it. It was just a terrible night for football. Having said that, there are a lot of people are reading stuff into it, even though you couldn't possibly read anything into it. Because, like, I mean, Kerry weren't at the pitch of the game. Mayo were. Obviously, Mayo coming off two losses, Kerry were breezed into a final. You'll say that straight away. So there was the pitch, Mayo hitting them hard, going 3-0 up against the wind. Kerry were asleep. Kerry looked like they didn't respect Mayo, if I'm being honest. That was basically it. So, like, I mean, last night I saw it on League Sunday, and suddenly now Mayo are back. And the analysis after the Dublin game, Mayo are shite. Mayo are gone.
Yeah.
Now Aidan O'Shea is great. Playing at centre-forward, you've started midfield, you're brilliant. This is your position. You play at centre-forward, but play in midfield.
Yeah.
That's not your... Like, it's just a lot. I mean, I'd even had Aidan O'Rourke, who's usually smart, and the RTÉ website, he was writing Kerry off for not having any defensive game plan when... Like, only two games ago against Dublin, Kerry clearly showed that they're working on their defensive game plan. And, like, they did really well against the Dublin team, and they manned up to them, and they got bodies back and they got tackles in. And Saturday night they didn't. So one game can't be that they're all fixed, and another game can't be that they've no defensive plan. I don't get... This is the frustrating thing about the league. You don't know where teams are at or how they care about it, or, like, you don't know what they did during the day or during the week, so you can't read into it. You take the game kind of as it was, and you can talk about talking points and what teams are trying to do, but you actually can't come to conclusions in feckin', what are we in, the middle of March?
March.
It's nonsense. Mayo, I'd write off that game. It was a messy night. It turned into a battle that Mayo wanted to win it more. And that was basically the story of that game.
Is the whole thing about Kerry as well, like, over the last five games before the Mayo game, like, they have been, like, really smart and defensive and aggressive. And
but it's that need for final conclusions.
Yeah, out of
all
every
the time,
game.
Out of every game.
Yeah, so Mayo have gone from shit to good, and Kerry have gone
Mayo
from class
are back
to...
again. You know, and like, you, instead of against Mayo at Dublin and Croke Park, you couldn't just say, geez, Mayo are awful.
Yeah.
Why does it have to be Mayo are finished and they won't win it all? Like, why does that conclusion always have to be drawn instead of just going, Jesus, they were awful. They were terrible against Dublin. They had no clue what they were doing. Now they were brilliant against Tyrone.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there's such inconsistencies because behind the scenes, none of us know what they're doing in training. You know, what they're focusing on. What they're picking teams and they're making four changes before the start. They're giving lads runs in different positions. You can't draw conclusions on any of this. Unfortunately, the league in Division 1 is a warm-up competition. pretty much for the top teams. Division 2, 3 and 4, you can conclude more into those because these teams really want to get up and get promoted. The problem is we don't feckin' see any of those games on television. Isn't it hilarious?
And just on Kerry, like they've gone to Galway and got a massive result, you know, slugged it out. They've beaten Tyrone, Monaghan, gone to Cavan, like they have been.
Very harsh to really criticise Kerry after that poor performance against Mayo. Like, I mean, and also, it was just a poor first 15-20 minutes, which had them chasing their tails then.
And the state of the weather, like, yeah, the ball to Tommy Walsh was never on that night, whereas the week before, that was the big thing we were talking about. Look at Tommy Walsh, you're going to use him in the summer, and then just couldn't play one ball with him because if you put it up in there, God knows where it was going.
Yeah, so just awful conditions altogether. So Cavan are practically down, like, there's nothing really that can save Cavan. They have a home match to Dublin, so they have to beat Dublin at home and have to hope for a three-way tie. So they have to hope that Monaghan lose to Mayo, and they have to hope that Roscommon draw with Kerry, and then they would all be on 4 points, and then Cavan have a better score difference. That's not going to happen, so they're straight back down. Cavan are not a Division 1 team. They don't have a Division 1 forward line. There's no point in saying anything else. They just don't. And they'll always go up and come straight back down, unfortunately for them. The Jack McCarron sending off, that was a very... I don't think it can be even overestimated how filthy that tackle was. I think that should have been a straight red. We got a second yellow, and Malachy Roark actually got sent off, which is very unlike him. I think it was from maybe complaining about this, but it was around that incident. It didn't show it last night in the highlights. But if a lad's running past you with his body open and you just punch him straight into the ribs, that's a closed fist punch. It's the same as a punch in the face. It's a straight red card. And McCarron's fond of that kind of thing.
He is. Like, I was just going to say that. He has, like, we're talking about Morgan being a pup, but like, he actually has a bit of previous in that as well. And I honestly think that's so cowardly. Like,
it is.
I think what Paddy Andrews did is manly. Paddy Andrews went for a ball, not knowing what would happen to him. He got the ball.
Yeah.
Jack McCarron pointing someone who's running up the pitch.
When your rib cage is open, it's a dirty, dirty thing to do. And you're not protected. You're meant to tackle the ball, and you see some players doing it. It's a filthy thing to do. It was a straight red, and I hope Malachy Roark wasn't complaining about the second yellow, because, like, I mean, it's at the minimum a yellow card.
Yeah, maybe he just didn't see what had happened. I don't know. I like to think that anyway, but I think when they watch back, they'll be like, right, yeah, we've gotten the wrong here. But like, we talk about this all the time. Like, what is brave about pointing somebody who's playing football?
Yeah.
Like, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely not. So that's another straight red. So there should have been those two straight reds from what we've seen. Should have been straight reds from what we've seen. Big news from Division 2 is that Meath are up. I owe Meath an apology. I tipped them to go down. So the first time since 2006. So it's going to take a huge turn of events for Meath not to go up. They have a plus 15 score difference. The next best is Donegal on plus 5, and Fermanagh the Black Death are on plus 2, which is not too surprising. Andy McEntee, just from the report of this, we didn't see anything of this. They had 6 shots on goal inside the first 6 minutes. Talk about going for teams. Like, I mean, that's some serious kind of stuff. Now, they had a strong win, but they're really, like Keane said, it was the same against Armagh. That they really, when they have a win, they're just pinning the opposition in, and they're really, really going for them with an aggressive press. So 6 shots on goal inside the first 6 minutes. That's some going. But Clare were rallied and were well in it at half time, and it was a Graham Riley goal, who just looks like he's going to be a super sub this year. He got a goal to put 4 in it. So that's it. So they're 2 points clear of Fermanagh. So Donegal are their second. So what the only way that Meath won't go up is if Donegal win, Fermanagh beat them, and Fermanagh will beat them on the head-to-head. And if Donegal have to beat Kildare, have to make up a 10-point score difference on Meath against Kildare, basically. So Meath are true. So congratulations to Meath. That's a great achievement from them, especially after last year. Third from bottom, I think they were, and losing to Longford in the league. So whatever Andy McEntee is doing this year, unfortunately we haven't seen them yet. But Keane doesn't really rave about them. Maybe he's doing the old cute tour, keeping expectations down. But like, I have Keane come in here and I'm like, Jesus, me, tell me. He says, they were all right. You know, they were
doing it all year.
Yeah, he's not really selling them to me too much.
Yeah, I'm just thinking if Fermanagh are planning on scoring 6 points again as well, Meath should be all right. Like, they don't hold them to 6 points.
No.
Meath will run riot against them.
You'd imagine Meath should be able to beat Fermanagh even in the last game. So like, I mean, and that, and the Donegal aren't guaranteed even to beat Kildare, because Kildare have an outside chance. That Division 2 is great. If Kildare beat Donegal, they go above them. And obviously if Meath beat Fermanagh, which are not too crazy sequence of events, then you've got Meath and Kildare going up, and we've got Leinster footballs back in the big time, baby. Yeah. Dublin, Meath and Kildare up in Division 1, the much maligned Leinster Championship. So that's it. Cork look to be relegated, so they're away to Armagh, which you'd imagine they won't even win that. But what they need to do, if they beat Armagh, they need Tipperary to beat Clare. If Tipperary beat Clare, then Armagh, or then Cork and Tipperary would be on the same points on 5, and Cork have beaten Tip, so they could potentially stay up. If they do their side of the draw, you might fancy Tip to beat Clare, and then amazingly Tip and Clare go down. So there's a little bit of you know, suspense about what's going to happen in that Division 3. I was thinking Cork are gone, but they're not gone at all, because that is not the most unlikely sequence of events. The Cork were 5 points up against Donegal at half time, so it was a game of two halves. They ended up losing by 7, a 12-point second half turnaround. Darrow Boyle and Neil McGee both came on, so the Guidor lads are back in the mix. So Boyle scored 2 points, so there might be a role for him, maybe as one of those working wing forwards. I think maybe midfield might be sewn up with McGee and McFadden, but a Boyle could play midfield either, I suppose.
Yeah, like they've got a lot of sort of big players now around there. That's really great to see, because he obviously hasn't featured that much for Donegal. Like, and now, yeah, like we've seen how great he is for Guidor, and yeah, it's like, Jesus, like he's a racehorse. We could play wing forward easily.
Carry over that kind of confidence from the club, and you know, do well. Division 3 is very interesting because there's a whole load of teams: Downleash, Westmeath, and Louth. And I think Longford have an outside chance of getting promoted. So, like, I mean, it's unreal. And at the bottom, you have Offaly and Carlow, who look like one of the two of them will be gone down with Sligo. So Offaly play Sligo and Carlow play Laois. And obviously Offaly beat Sligo. This was one of the permutations I was talking about last Thursday. Yeah. And Laois beat Carlow. Carlow go down on the head-to-head with Offaly. So, like, I mean, and that's... Carlow would be very unlucky, because in my head, Offaly have been a lot less impressive than Carlow in Division yeah. 3 and could actually pip them. But what's going to mess this division up is that obviously Westmeath and Louth was postponed. Meath and Clare was postponed as well, and that was refixed to the very next day, wasn't it? That was refixed until the Sunday. Westmeath and Louth, so Drogheda was unplayable. Like, are you telling me, obviously it's not fair for players to say, right, well, it's off on Saturday, but now your bank holiday Monday is gone. So I would maybe say it's fair enough that, but when are they going to have to play this in midweek, or else either the League 3 final is played the first weekend in April, which is not what they want. And obviously, because Westmeath are in the hunt for promotion, they can't just write off a round like they did last year. So it's, you know what I mean, they're completely screwed. And what happened? The Irish weather in March.
Deja vu.
Who predicted this? Us. Who predicted it last year? Us. Yeah. So, like, they made no tweaks at all to this time of the year. And in fact, like we mentioned last Thursday, there's officials who are completely detached to the reality for players, are even talking about moving the under 20 into this area. But anyway, so that this is a real mess. So Westmeath and Louth might have to play this Wednesday night. There's been no word as of when we started recording as to when this is on. Westmeath are favourites probably to go up with Down. If Westmeath beat Louth and win their last game, they go up. There's nothing Laois can do about that.
The GA need to hope that they can play midweek, even though it's unfair on players, but like, they've left themselves again with no room for error, and then it's just like, you know, 1 week of bad weather, everything gets knocked back, and it gets into April, and then we all start complaining about April for clubs, and you know, it's the exact same thing that happened in 2018. So yeah, they may hope that they can get a play on Tuesday or Wednesday night, which isn't fair on the players, but sure, who cares about the players?
The big talking point from Division 4 is Derry beat Leitrim pretty well, 7 points in the end. We might talk a little bit about Derry in performance of the weekend. So that's that. There's nothing really else, but Division 4 is just boring because the two of those teams are up. Anyway, last story here before we go into part two is one that caught my eye. Colin Kelly, who's been on the show a couple of times, obviously managed Louth, got them out of Division 4 and Division 3, then went to manage Westmeath, only lasted a year with Westmeath. Then he went back, he's just managing some intermediate team in Louth now. But he wanted an interview for the Loud under 20 job, and he didn't get an interview. Now, I'd be completely on his side on this. I don't know what went on behind the scenes in Loud, but how a manager of Colm Kelly's calibre, who is an interest in your under-20s, that's a joke. An ex-player, that he would not get an interview for that job. So there's politics going on there in some way, because on the surface of it, it looks completely wrong that a county board wouldn't give him an interview at the very least. So now he's after joining the Wexford backroom team. And Wexford, who do Wexford play in the first round of the championship on the 12th of May Park? Loud. So how has this come about? Like, I mean, this is hilarious. This is kind of Colm Kelly maybe just being very, very annoyed. Did he reach out to Wexford? Did Wexford hear that this interview hadn't been granted and approached him? It's just a bizarre turn of events that he'd end up with Wexford, who play Loud almost. It looks, listen, if you're putting two and two together, here's somebody that's been scorned and he's getting revenge.
Yeah. Like,
I think you need to rise above that revenge when it comes to your own county.
Your own county.
I have thought of this revenge mission. Like when I got burned from Port Leash that time, I had thought about joining another club in Leash and going, you know, up yours. And
really?
But then you have to think, oh, come on. Like, I mean, you have to, those revenge thoughts, and I would be a very vengeful person. But you have to fight against that, like, and go, wait, do you regret this? This is knee jerk. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sleep on it for a night or two.
Well, even, sleep on it for 6 months and calm down.
In your case, 6 months.
I think I needed 6 months maybe to calm down. But yeah, I think he's making a mistake. You know, if they were his intentions. Now, we've got things wrong with Colm Kelly, and he's pulled me up on the show before about this. So I'm sure he might be contacting me when he listens to this, because he told me the last time, it was about the Westmead players. He was bringing in players onto the panel later. And I said, I can't understand how managers do this. This door opened, they miss all the stuff, but they lost a lot of players and he needed to build it up for training. And he told me, anytime you've got any problem with anything or wondering stuff around you, just ring me and find out. So I haven't rang him and I'm back speculating again. So I could be expecting a text message from Colin here.
Yeah, that's like, it's weird going against your own county anyway, but then in those circumstances. No, I think it's more weird that Loud wouldn't even, Jesus, boy, might be worth chatting to you if he wants to come into our underage setup and help out there. Like, but
I agree. Colin, get in contact if I've got this wrong, which I could have. Right, we'll be back with part two.
Conan Doherty is a fantastic analyst, and I mean, I'd really heed what he would say in your programme.
I think Tyrone are going to win. I'm going to go with them. As much as I predicted Dublin to win the All-Ireland at the start of the year, I just think Tyrone are going too well. They're unaffected by the other team. Too well set up. I think they've been preparing for Dublin for 2 years. They're ready for them. I'm going to go with them. Yeah.
So Tyrone won 14, Dublin won 11. So this was just a fantastic performance from Tyrone, and this is Tyrone pretty much doing, like, again, I don't want to sound cocky and blow our own trumpets, but this is Tyrone doing what we've been trying to preach, me, you and Keane Ward, on this show for how long? That Dublin's, one of their great strengths is always one of their weaknesses, that they're so aggressive and they push up everywhere, that a long early ball will give you a 2-on-2 or a 1-on-1. Leash proved it last year in the Leinster final. They were the only team, we said loads of times, that came with an obvious attacking plan where they wanted to run the ball and give in good long ball. Leash might not have had the quality that day and they didn't have the support up to them. There also wasn't an attacking mark back then, which, you know, might have suited Evan O'Carroll or Donny Kingston a couple of times. Dublin were able to go back and double up. Dublin will cop on pretty quick to this, but the offensive mark obviously gives you the weapon that a sweeper's no good with that kind of ball coming in, because once it's won, your sweeper can't double up. But all those things aside, Tyrone are clearly, the penny has dropped with Mickey Hart. Now, he's been stubborn for a long, long time, and we've been pleading with Tyrone to mix up their game, and they flirted with it last year a little bit. It was more with Richie Donnelly in there. Now they've Matty Donnelly in there, and they've Cathal McShane in there, and they have two big men who can win their own ball and score. And that's double trouble for bloody Dublin, because we've said it before, Dublin might have one lad in there that can handle a big, big man that can score. Mm. Johnny Cooper doesn't look like he likes that type of ball, doesn't look like he likes marking that type of fella. He likes to get out in front of you. So all in all, it's hugely positive from Tyrone. Hugely, hugely positive. And Mickey Hart has finally realised that having variety to your attack is better than just having one attacking game plan, which just seems so, like, some of the things we say here, like, seem so logical, and then you're wondering, why the hell did that take Mickey Hart, who's a brilliant manager, this long to figure this out?
Yeah, who has, like, sort of orchestrated some of the most amazing attacks that we've seen down through the years. And I actually thought it was mad looking at him afterwards, and he was so, like, he was grabbing McShane and Donnelly, and it was like, we did it. Like, you know, I didn't see this coming, but you actually are good enough. Like, because McShane and Donnelly are big men, but they're quality footballers.
Yeah.
Like Richie Donnelly, who actually had a good game out around the middle, but that was the difference. He was winning ball up there and not really, like, you know, doing much of it. Whereas when Matty Donnelly got the ball there on Saturday night, turning straight away and swinging it over and always on the run.
Yeah. And McShane's needed an identity. I think McShane's always gone along, what is he?
Mm.
He's not good enough for a midfielder. He's not able for that kind of level. Is he a forward? I'm always wondering, McShane, what is he? That's what he is.
Yeah.
He's a big man who can win his own ball and he can score. And he's not been used in that position. Like, I mean, like, it's actually hilarious talking about, like, when you talk about Mickey Hart. They've been going with Mark Bradley. They've been going with Lee Brennan. They've been going with
McCurry.
Going with all these players. Isn't it amazing? Well, you've McShane, who can put in a performance like that and put in a finish like that on Cluxton. And this fella's been out floating around the midfield and still kind of thinking, is this lad even a top quality? Is he a quality intercounty player? What is this lad really?
Yeah.
What's his selling point to me? Like, I've always been like this with McShane. But now you can see that there is a real player there if he's used correctly.
Yeah, it was. But yeah, he was just one of the lads before, one of the boys running up the pitch, and he looked like he had a bit of muscle.
And he never had that pace to break a pace, and he never really had the, like I said, he's not able for a Fenton or a proper midfielder. So he was always like, all I ever thought he was is an option for a kick out from Morgan out on a wing. That's all I ever thought he was. Like.
But now, like, him in there is making everybody else look better. Look at that ball Hamsey played on the right, the outside of the boot, like diagonal ball, like, you know, across to the other side, and McShane wins the mark. And, you know, suddenly you're like, Jesus, yeah, that's a great ball from Hamsey, because now that option's on. Where it never was before, it was Mark Bradley having three men cover his mouth, you know, keep him down. But
now, I'd say that one of the Bradleys or Alan McCurry would still win that ball, because it was just, the quality of that ball was just out of this world. Like, and I mean, Hamsey gave that. Hamsey wouldn't have given it probably if one of them were in there. Although, like, I mean, if the diagonal ball is good enough, it doesn't matter what size you are, you'll probably win it, because you're tricking the back anyway.
And I suppose the system then is the most important thing there.
The system's more important. Like, the system is, we're running it and these little small lads are looping around us. That was the system.
Yeah.
This system's completely different. Now they're being encouraged. But Mickey Hart was interviewed on the pitch after the match, and after a match at some point, I think, and he said, long kick passes don't come naturally to our players. So this is kind of maybe given a reason why they didn't do it. On the evidence of Hamsey's ball, of the evidence of Frank of Burns, some of his passes, Niall Sludden, little tasty little dinky diagonal balls that Cara Finn gave, I didn't see much evidence that it didn't come naturally to these lads. It wasn't focused on. Any team can give, like, good ball in. These are inter-county players. These are top-level players. They can all kick off the inside of the boot. Most of them kick off the outside of the boot. This is Hamsey plays in the full back line, giving that kind of a ball off the outside of the boot. They need to be encouraged to do it.
Yeah.
They need to be told, if that doesn't go to hand, and like Mickey Hart said, when Dublin copped onto it, they didn't all work out. But on Tuesday night, with the ones that didn't work out, the fella who gave in the ball that didn't work out is not going to be said, well, you gave away 4%. The focus is going to change. Is that we're getting so much change off these balls. I don't care if 5-6 of them break down.
Yep.
That was the old Mead philosophy. Get it into Ollie Murphy and Graham Geraghty. And if they come out with 3 of them, well, out of the 3 we win, we might get 2-1 off it.
Yeah.
Like, you have to weigh up what is going to work for you. And that clearly works. And again, I think this is has been so obvious for so long. And the great thing about this is that it was on television. It was analysed last night on League Sunday. And I keep saying that managers are copycats. They need to see something in action. Us talking about it is no good. That's just theory.
Yeah.
They don't deal with theory. They don't deal with what they're being told to do. They deal with what they can see. Because I think behind it all, a lot of managers are very basic and they want to see it work before they do it. And I think we'll see a lot more of teams attacking Dublin like this. We saw Kerry doing it in the league. Now we're seeing Tyrone. I think Kevin Walsh will absolutely see it. And we're looking at the teams that could potentially beat Dublin by doing this. So you're going to mention Tyrone, you're going to mention Donegal. Absolutely, Donegal are going to get that in early. Yeah. And they absolutely have players that can really hurt Dublin. And let's put Dublin back on their arses a bit. Because let's
exactly,
be honest,
yeah.
Dublin have been at their ease for the last 2 or 3 years, focusing on defensive teams, out-muscling defensive teams, a better running game than their full-back line marking from the front,
yeah,
destroying teams out in front and never having their manners put on them by giving a long bloody ball to catch them out by marking from the front. So now Dublin have to scratch their heads and go, Jesus, this has completely taken us.
Yeah.
Now we have to start focusing on how we're going to deal with this.
Yeah, this was the first time in 6 years that Tyrone actually asked Dublin a question.
Yes.
They've been always trying to answer the questions, and we've probably been guilty of thinking, oh, maybe Tyrone had the answers for Dublin's questions. But no, like that on Saturday night, it was, like, how good is Davy Byrne? How can you cope with this long ball?
Yeah.
Like, how can you cope with Matty Donnelly? There's a question for you. Like, and then, like, are your fullback line good enough? Maybe not. And then suddenly now Dublin have to respond. Do they bring a sweeper back? That takes away from their aggressive press. You get out of defence easier.
Exactly.
Just ask them a question.
Ask them that extra question. Do we have to leave our half back line in position? Do we need to tell Jack McCaffrey not to attack so much because we need to double up? We can't just double up. Keane O'Sullivan's doubling up on McShane. Who's going to double up on Matty Donnelly? Jack, I need you to be a little less attacking. Suddenly they're screwed. And you've a very good point on the, they might need to leave the full-time sweeper there. Mm. They might need to bring a wing forward back if you have enough. Now, Dublin wouldn't do that. But again, they have to start talking about this in training.
Yeah.
Now their game plan is being messed up. How has it taken this long to realise? Like, it's just been a culture of fear around Dublin. We can't beat them. We have to contain them. And we have to turn the game into such a dog mess that we might get a flick on goal late, like Fermanagh against Monaghan last year, and we'll beat them that way. Dublin realised that this is all that's coming at us. They constantly worked at it. They got Jason Sherlock in. They did basketball coaching. They did their loops. They don't bring ball into contact. They leave lads outside the screen to always have the out ball. They perfected it.
Mm.
And they got so comfortable with it, they won an All-Ireland last year without even a glove being landed on them, because Mayo were out and Kerry were out. And they are the only teams that might have asked the question of them, and they're the only teams that have come close. Kerry have beaten them and in the league final, which was a very big game, and Mayo have nearly beaten them. And it's taken this long for the other teams to realise it's not because Mayo and Kerry are the two other best teams in the country and, oh, they've got the players to do it. Tyrone have the players to do it. Donegal have. Galway have. You have to want to do it. You have to decide,
yeah,
this is our game plan now. And again, here's a quote from Mickey, like, I mean, which is hilarious when you think about it. If you kick every ball in, then after the first 3 or 4, we were quite successful. Dublin were more conscious of it and cut out a number of them. So again, it's about picking the right time to kick and the right time to run, and about mixing your game up a bit. I suppose we've been known as a running team for a few years now, and we do need to bring a bit of variety to our game, and perhaps this is one way of doing it. It's so basic, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
That instead of always doing the same thing, that you might make the other team guess and have a plan.
Yeah.
Two ways of hurting a team not better than one? Like, I mean, it's that's very obvious. But I do think that the important thing here is the variety. So Colin McShane and the Donnelly long balls, you have to remember that Dublin will get so spooked by that sweeper is going to start drifting back a lot earlier, maybe one or two. You've two men out the field then. So you absolutely can run a few and use those extra men you have out the field, because you'll be pairing up a lot more one-on-one. So those extra men will cause, you know what I mean, better overlaps than when, if you run the ball against Dublin, they're all going to filter back. And
yeah,
by the time you know it, Dublin have 13, and you're always saying, well, Dublin are a defensive team. No, they only are again. How come Dublin didn't have 13 back when these lovely balls were being,
yeah,
peppered in? They were completely exposed because Dublin filter back. They don't go back before the ball. And there you go. Like, it's very basic analysis, isn't it?
And, like, yeah, and they've been playing the same way, like you said. And, like, for the last few years, the terms of engagement, except against Mayo, have always been set by Dublin. It's always been on Dublin's terms. Like, and,
yeah,
like, so they know how the team's going to set up. They're all going to be behind the ball. Dublin know how to work around it. And then when the team rarely turn it over or win a kick out, Dublin know how to defend that. They all track back and they get into the position and they know how to block off those spaces,
yeah,
you're trying to hand pass around them.
Yeah, and you have two players. See, I never agreed with Peter Hart in that full forward line, even though he was. I've always said there's a brilliant role for Peter Hart and Niall Sludden. Imagine marking them around the half forward line, between the half forward line and midfield, and that's their area. And seeing Sludden being able to pick up ball past the halfway line and giving diagonal ball into Donnelly. And actually, for one of Donnelly's balls, after Sludden's given that diagonal ball, Hart's gone off him. Yeah. He didn't use him. And one Donnelly knocks it down to to McShane. It just looked like this is beautiful.
Yeah.
This is leaving Donnelly, this is leaving McShane, and then Sludden and Hart playing off them.
What a four.
Yeah. That's dangerous. That's very, very, very dangerous. And this is a completely different Tyrone team by doing this.
Yeah, I think that comment from Mickey Hart about like their kick passing not being natural, like that'd be hard to swallow as a Tyrone person, because like they've always been the most naturally talented Ulster team anyway at football.
Yeah.
You know, it's always come so easy to him, and they have a lot of fantastic players there. So I think, I don't know, was that him just sort of saving face from the last couple of years?
Maybe.
But they have some beautiful players.
Listen, it's always what you're coached. What are you encouraged to do? I always say, you look at Everton under David Moyes, right? So there would have been a typically British style, get the ball down, play wingers, play the wing. Yeah. Then Roberto Martinez takes them over. So there's a lot of managers who said Everton players can't play that Barcelona possession style game. Roberto Martinez had them just completely dominating possession against teams. This is Everton, not a top team. He encouraged them. They're professional footballers. Of course they can pass the ball and control it. It's what you're encouraging them to do. And you're not having Tyrone now in fear of kick passing a ball away and saying to them, well, it's much easier to retain possession through the hands. Now you're encouraging them to kick and not punishing them for messing up a kick. And look at them flourish, like they can flourish. These are the top level players. And you have to remember, the culture of football in Tyrone was not always that culture.
No.
Like the 05 winning team is one of the greatest football teams we've ever seen.
Yeah.
That's Tyrone. That was always, well, we don't have that quality of players. You don't need that quality of players. You can still play an attacking brand style of football with lesser players and make that effective, you know?
Yeah, and that's been the culture even before they won those All-Irelands. Like, you know, in the 90s, they had a really quality team as well. Like, and that culture has been there longer than this sort of defensive counter-attacking system has been.
Yeah, but so they're out of it now, thankfully. They're out of it, so we can stop giving out about them. And like I said, the next thing then for the championship, which will be really important, and that's the thing that we've been talking about, if that offensive mark isn't there, which it won't be, is Sludden and Hart, get up. Get up, get up. I don't want you dropping back too far, because these lads are going to need, whatever about them playing well together, you know, or whatever those diagonal balls, there are occasions when they're matched up and they're being marked tight where they have to have that option of a hand pass off. And that hand pass off is breaking through the tackle. And that's where Hart and Sludden come in. So like leaving those two in next year with a huge gap between them and launching in hoping for an offensive mark, that might be the case. But in the championship this year, the Sludden, it's on you, Sludden and Hart, that if I see these two fellas isolated in there with no options, that's on the two of you. And that's the message to them. So like they know their new roles now. You can work as far as midfield, but you will be marked. So don't bring any more men back. You stay up with your two men and you give us that option of the offload. So this is great. It's great stuff from Tyrone. It has to be said. Dublin won't be overly fussed about their performance, but at the same time, this will definitely give them a cause for concern, in that suddenly now, instead of what they've been working on for the last maybe 3 years, might be changing in the year. They would really have liked things just to be a little bit more comfortable than this.
Yeah, it's just bad timing. Like it's a shock to the system. Like suddenly they
in the
to,
five in a row. Yeah,
they have to do a different exercise in the gym sort of thing. It's like, whoa, what? They have been strong and everything else, but yeah, like they still have the best team, you know, and they probably still unfortunately go on and win the All-Ireland, but yeah, it's just, you have to adapt, and they have to adapt quickly.
Yeah, exactly. Right, we'll be back with Paddy Power performance of the weekend. Happiness hit her like a train on a
track. I don't really know Jim anymore. Me and him were like best friends when we played, you know. He's seen the light of Jesus, and I'm still like fighting the devil, you know.
The dog days are over. The dog days are done. The horses are coming, so you better run.
So Paddy Power performance the weekend, and the first one I have to go with Evan O'Carroll. So he scored 1-3. One was a free, one was a mark. He got 1-1 from play. I have tweeted out his goal, right? If any of you listening have not seen this goal, please, please look at this goal. It's one of the best goals you're likely to see. And this is a ball from Donny Kingston from literally halfway line.
Yeah.
And it was a bomb of a ball. Now, it was a bit of a diagonal on it, but it wasn't. It was old school. It was like to the bomber listing back in the day. And Evan O'Carroll caught a ball out of the clouds. It was just one of the most spectacular catches, in that he caught it. He caught the ball way back behind his line of vision. So there's no way, like, for catches, the technique is always keep your eye on the ball. Like playing golf, keep your eye on the ball. Yeah. Playing tennis, you keep your eye on the ball. He couldn't possibly, where he caught the ball, have been looking at the ball. So this was just a pure instinctive catch. The pace that was on the ball after it coming that far, like to hold on to that in the conditions. And then not only that, when he caught it, he's on the edge of the 6 yard box. His balance is a little bit off because he caught it so spectacularly. To hold his footing, turn around, in a split second realize, shit, I'm in a one-on-one here, and took it just completely neatly into the corner of the goals. My God, Conan, that was spectacular now. And this isn't just Leash. It doesn't matter if this was any county doing this. This was beautiful.
I saw you tweeting saying, what a goal. And I was like, oh, Jesus, here we go. And all Leash loving. And then I saw it and I was like, Jesus Christ. Like the pass was unbelievable. The catch was perfect. Like, you know, it was like a catch I haven't seen before. As you said, it didn't have his eye on it. But then they go from a 60, 65 yard pass. It was a big boomer catch. And then just this little sort of dink, not a dink, but like just caressed. And
a corner, a forward that scores a goal like that does not have the skill set to catch a ball like that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Now Donny Kingston has that skill set too. He has that kind of subtlety and that deftness in there as well. But I can only imagine, like, I mean, imagine running towards goals. And me and you always talk about this, that Stevie says blasted, and I was never good at scoring goals. I just didn't have that ability. But I know for a fact, if I catch a ball in the 6 yard box, I don't know. My brain is not able to refocus to process what I'm meant to do that fast, and actually just, you know, tastily took it away into the corner. Yeah. So it's just everything about it was brilliant. Obviously, Leash had a very good win away to Offaly. It's a local derby, and it'll be a local derby against Carlow as well. I thought if they got to 10, they should win it. They should get up. They'd be very unlucky if they don't. But like, I mean, with Donny Kingston, Evan O'Carroll flying it, Paul Catalan came on, scored 1-1. Munley is back playing well. Like, I mean, Leash definitely have, and John O'Loughlin and Kieran Lillis in midfield. Like, Leash are a Division 2 team now. I think that they're doing well. John Sugrue, the last time Leash were in Division 3, they were relegated badly. This time they've got, they'll probably get 10 points, at least 8 points. So there's a huge improvement, clearly, in the 2 years. They're playing a good brand of football, and, like, you know, they're playing football. They also have a variety to their attack in that they run some and some they give in long. And, like, I mean, when you look at it, a team like Leash showing variety to their attacks, and then you're looking at the top level teams and we're saying, why don't they show variety to their attacks? Like, a lot of that credit goes to John Sugrue.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of John Sugrue. I would love to see Leash, Kildare and Meath going at it in a provincial championship without Dublin, maybe, because I think that'd be real tasty.
Yeah, and Westmeath too. Like, Leinster, a pretty good province outside of Dublin. Martin Farraher, outstanding. He was brilliant last year in the final too. Like, I mean, he cleaned up some of his lovely little points from underneath the Cusack stand, lovely curlers, and you almost know by the way he flicks around the outside of it, this is curling back in. This is going to be a point just from the technique. And obviously he was interviewed on with our own Niall McIntyre, and he was talking about being on the Galway panel. He said, I suppose I was in there a few years ago, but it didn't really work out for me personally. Hopefully in the future I might get a call or might get a chance. I was thinking, like, imagine a player at this level of club football hoping he gets a chance. You will get a chance, Martin. Like, I mean, or else Kevin Walsh needs his head read.
Yeah.
Galway have so many different forwards. Like, I mean, they could field two inter-county forward lines. They're outside of Dublin. They have the most depth to their forward line. When you see a fella like him operating at that level and he's hoping to make the Galway panel.
Where normally he should be coming and leading the thing now. He'd be crying out to get him back in.
Yeah, yeah, here's our main man coming back in. It's gas.
Because you're thinking like Silk and Molloy coming, has to start straight away. Ian Burke has to start straight away. I think he shouldn't be far off. Like, you know, he just has that something else. And there's a great quote from Ian Wright. One time he was talking about George Graham. He used to tell him to run, make 10 runs across the box during the game. No matter what's happening, just do it because something will happen when you make those runs. And like, this is what happens with all the Cora Finn forwards. They all make those runs and then just things happen. Like, everything opens up, boys become free, and Farher clips over lovely scores.
Yeah, he definitely does it. He can do the loop as well. He likes the loop. Doughy Burke and Ronan Steed were outstanding in midfield. Doughy Burke got man of the match. I would have given that to him too. I thought he was absolutely brilliant. He got forward, he scored, I think he got 2 points. One of them should have been a goal early on that was saved, knocked over the bar. Then he got one in the second half. He put Doughy Casey in his pocket. That was one of the matchups we actually got right. Doughy Casey ended up getting taken off, and he's a real leading force. So it's the midfield battle. You're at, like, we know Crokes obviously have a very good style of play, but if you can't win primary possession in midfield, if you're bullied in midfield, and that's it, then Cara Finn, on the flip side, when you're winning midfield, suddenly you're a half forward liner into play a lot, suddenly you're full forward liner, get a lovely ball, and it's just a total different ball game. So I'm putting them in as a joint, Steed and Burke. Aidan O'Shea outstanding the other night. Again, Aidan O'Shea is like the poster boy for Mayo. Write them off, he's back, he's terrible, he's back. Aidan O'Shea is one of the most honest players you'll ever see. I've said this constantly, you'll always get a shift out of him. No, he's not the greatest point scorer in the world. He's got no confidence anymore now going for points. He just turns them down all the time. And I tell you why, it's because he missed one in an All-Ireland final against Dublin, and suddenly he doesn't have bottle. And it's not that he doesn't have bottle, he's just not a good point scorer. So now I think Aidan O'Shea has said, do you know what, I'm not even ever going to shoot at the goals, because people are putting this down to me not having bottle, when it's actually I'm not that good at kicking points.
And people were taking too much significance from it as well when he missed. Yeah. Like, oh, they're rattled, like they don't have it.
That's it, because he's seen as that spiritual leader. But Aidan O'Shea, qualities, tackling, physicality, like, I mean, competitiveness, you know, fetching, all those qualities. He's a middle third player. I still think centre forward is his best position. I think he'll absolutely love or be brilliant in midfield. We know from Mayo are overloaded with good midfielders and not overloaded with good forwards. So Mayo, while they might like to play Aidan in midfield, they play him centre forward. Mm. And that's where I would play him for Mayo. And he still does the shift out around midfield. And the theory behind him playing centre forward is that the centre back won't follow him midfield, and he'll either have a free role in midfield or the centre back will follow him and you're leaving the centre wide open. So I think the idea that play him centre forward is the right one, and he should continue on there. But Matthew Ruan, he's been the real find. He's been excellent. He's briefy as well. Like, I mean, Jesus, they have him and the two O'Shea's in around that middle of the field. He was brilliant. His goal was brilliant. It was a brilliant finish, similar enough to the Cottle McShane one. Just showed great composure to keep it down and put it down under the goalkeeper, who came diving out.
It makes the goalkeepers look so bad. It does. Motion, doesn't it?
It does. But yeah.
They're expecting a big blast, so they're just making themselves big.
That's it. So just put it down underneath him. But that's it. It just takes composure to do that. But he's flying it. Like, I mean, he's got a great engine out. Again, these type of players with the great engines in these kind of conditions, you'd like to see him in Croke Park, but he seems to have plenty. His engine is very good, and he's constantly breaking forward. Jack Barry didn't cover himself in glory. He initially tried to block down Ruan for his goal early in the move. Didn't track him at all. Laziness. Kerry just weren't at it the other night. Like, there's no point in saying it. I don't know why. But Ruan continued on his run, and it all opened up for him. But Kerry were trying to force the issue at that stage. But yeah, he's definitely a find for Mayo.
Yeah,
and he was, not that they needed another midfielder.
Yeah, I know. It's another reason why Aidan O'Shea shouldn't be midfielder, because he got plenty there. But he was one of the good players against Dublin. I know it's very hard to look into that game, but he was one person who did come out of it with a bit of glory. He's probably been their best player in the league so far.
Yeah, no, definitely has. Shane McGuigan, 2-5. Christopher Bradley, 6 points. McGuigan got 2-3 from play. Derry put manners on the Leitrim Rising. Are we a little bit enthusiastic? A little bit like Leash last year, really, Conan, isn't it? Like, I mean, the top Division 4, which you're expected to do, coming off a league win, Even like Leash celebrated winning, lifting a cup in Croke Park. I don't care who you are, you still lift a cup in Croke Park. Then you're going into the championship with more confidence. It worked for Leash last year. You know, it could potentially work for Derry again. Definitely Christopher Bradley, him back, he's a great player. And McGuigan, they're the two Slocknail fellas. Yeah. And for whatever reasons, you don't always see them in the forward line for Derry.
And now McGuigan's young enough, like, so he's got a massive future ahead of him. Bradley has been somebody who, like, Slocknail have been dominant in Derry for 5 years, and he's been centre forward, their main man, sort of. So people always wanted to see Bradley in. But
only a slip of a fella, isn't he?
Yeah, that's it. But he seems to be sort of committed this year. He's still Van der Linde running around. Like, McCaig's off the leash a bit more. He's played midfield in a couple of games, centre halfback mostly. Like, they have a good team. Like, they're not an amazing team, but when they went to Division 4, everyone was just like, there was a big outcry in Derry. They've never been there. Same with Leash, probably. And yeah, so now they're just sort of back up to where they are and see how we get on Division 3. Sounding like Keane Ward now, trying to play it down.
But McGuigan and Bradley, like, I mean, you talk about their style of play. McGuigan and Bradley don't really come from a culture in Slocknail of getting back ahead of the ball and doing all that dog work. They work hard, but they like to work hard to turn over the ball high up the field. So I wonder, it'd be interesting to see, are Derry playing really defensive style? It doesn't look, with those two forwards, you're probably not playing to their strengths, if it is.
And they have Emmett Bradley as well, playing centre forward. Like, so he's the guy.
He's very good,
and he's been playing midfield a lot as well. But like, that's where he was playing. But they're playing centre forward this year. And so you have Pádraig Cassidy, the Slocknail midfielder, at wing forward. And Kieran McFaul has come back. He's from Emmett Bradley's club. He's wing forward as well. He was out in America with Jim McConnelly. They're your workers, but two good players as well. Like, you know, so they can get back and just leave the forward line in place. So, yeah, it's going to be hard because obviously they've played Division 4 teams the whole year and now they're going to the Ulster Championship. So it'll be, a big step up for them, but it's good to see.
Yeah, no, it's good to see, obviously, for you. So the winners of Performance of the Weekend is a joint winners. So we've got two lucky pants from Paddy Power. It's Matty Donnelly and Colin McShane. So they're just brilliant. McShane finished with 1-4, Matty Donnelly 3 from play. Not only that, Donnelly was back in defence with a flying block on Colin Baskell, and he followed it up with a knee to the side of the head, I'm pretty sure, as well, which was accidental. But it was just a brilliant performance from those two. It has definitely warmed the cockles of GAA supporters in how to take on Dublin and Croke Park and how to match up and how to go say, we're going to try and take you on, not just try to contain you. And, like, I mean, we definitely should be more enthusiastic based on that, because if Tyrone can do it, everybody else can do it. And now we can go up and actually analyse games. I've been so bored, Conan, I'm not going to lie, analysing Dublin's games again. Yeah. Like, even after the All-Ireland final last year, we didn't even analyse the game all that much, because it was all like, well, Dublin won it by, you know, matching by...
Tyrone had a good 15 minutes.
Out-muscling, the running game wasn't good enough for Dublin. And but it was just constant same analysis from Dublin, no matter who they played. Galway, Donegal, all these teams. And it just got so boring. They weren't asking questions of Dublin. It was just the same old analysis. And, like, I mean, for variety in our show, thanks, lads. Because, like, seriously, it's just, now it gives our preview show an awful lot more to talk about. Jesus, what are we going to do against Dublin now? How are Dublin going to deal with this?
Yeah.
Isn't it just fantastic? Like, I'm really happy. Like, you can't read hugely into league, but you can read into a new tactical shift. And that's what this is, clearly. And that we just wait now on the other teams to see Tyrone, having beaten Dublin in their own backyard. It is their own backyard. With these tactics, there are two men inside scoring, 1-7 between them. And now it's up to the rest of you to see what you can do. And that's it. So, like, I mean, Matty Donnelly and Cottle McShane, well deserving of Performance of the Weekend. So that's it. Conan, thanks for coming in today.
No problem at all. It's a pleasure.
No bother. We've a day in lieu for this now, and we're out the door very soon. So there you go. Right, we'll be back on Thursday with the very final round. So we'll go through all the permutations. We've touched on them today, and we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.